I'm Marco Werman. This is The World. Is that leg of yours loaded? It's a surreal question you might want to put to Chinese artist Ai Weiwei. He's posted a picture of himself in a straw hat, boxers, and black socks, holding out his right leg and using his toe as a sight, as if he's aiming a gun. It's gone viral, as the artist's pronouncements often do. Ai Weiwei calls it a statement about the overuse of power in fighting terrorism, as in China's recent spate of violence. In a way, he's all about poking the Chinese authorities, testing the boundaries of the country's notorious censorship. Sometimes there is just no way around it. When New Yorker staff writer Evan Osnos wanted to publish his new book about China in China, he wasn't especially surprised when authorities wanted to X out about one in every four pages. So there is no Chinese edition of Age of Ambition, Chasing Fortune, Truth and Faith in the New China. Among the characters in his book that likely raised the eyebrows of Chinese authorities are two entrepreneurs Osnos got to know over many years. He told me first about Hu Shuli, known by some as a female godfather.
I didn't expect to find people like her when I got there. She's a journalist, and she came up very much in the old-fashioned party-run state newspaper system where you were always supposed to color within the lines, never say anything that the editors didn't approve of. And she went to the United States when she was young. She's got a taste for what the press looks like outside China. And she came back inspired and said, frankly, I want to do journalism at the level that people are doing it elsewhere. And she started a magazine called Caijing, which means finance and economics. And what she discovered, which was absolutely a crucial insight, was that as China's economy began to balloon in size and sophistication, there were all of these people in China who needed to know things. I mean, they couldn't afford not to understand what was happening in corporate life and in government. And she fed into that market. And all of a sudden, it turned out that being an independent media organization was possible, but very dangerous. It meant you had to figure out where the lines were. And that's the process that I followed with her for several years.
And in between journalism school and starting this magazine, she actually took part in the Tiananmen demonstrations in 1989. What was kind of the lesson she took away from that, that she then brought into her magazine? Is there one?
In 1989, a lot of journalists went down to the square in the middle of Beijing, and there was this brief period in which they were able to report anything they wanted. But by the end of the demonstrations, the order had come down that the reporters who had embraced it too zealously would be punished. And she was punished. And she was sent down to the provinces and sort of worked in obscurity for a few years. But I think the lesson for her was two things. One, she learned that when moments of opportunity arose, you could do great journalism in China if you figured out how far you could push and how far you could go. But I think the other lesson she learned was that the consequences for going too far are very severe. And so she learned to do something that the Chinese call playing edge ball, which is taken from ping pong, which is to hit a ball just at the corner of the table so that you still win the point without missing the table entirely. And that's the way that she's gone about her journalism.
Yeah, she is a fascinating character. And a good contrast to Hu Shuli is a 28-year-old graduate student you met named Tang Jie, kind of a homegrown Chinese patriot. And I want our listeners to hear a taste of this documentary, kind of activist video he made called China Stand Up. This went viral in the countdown to the 2008 Summer Olympics in Beijing when China was coming under heavy international criticism for its crackdown in Tibet. Let's hear this. Evan, there are so many things going on in this video. Stock images collected from various news media, this glorious music, echoes of national pride. What did Tang Jie do with this video, and why did it grab so much attention?
He made it on his home computer. It was about 5 minutes long. He put it out on the web, and it became a sensation. It became the second most popular video in the country. And this video that he had produced became a manifesto, really, for an angry young stripe of the population. They call themselves the angry youth in Chinese. And what angers them, ultimately, is that they've discovered that the rest of the world doesn't look at China quite the way that they look at China. So in Tang Jie's case, you know, he's the son of farmers who don't read or write, and he got an education. He went to graduate school, studied European political philosophy, and he looks at the way the rest of the world can criticize China, and he says, I don't understand why you're criticizing in this country. This is a country I'm proud of. And that ultimately makes him mad.
You have this later meeting with Tang, and he's having trouble getting investors to back an online kind of nationalist version he wants to start of YouTube. What continues to motivate someone like him? And is he just an oddball in China?
he's not an oddball, because it turned out that what he was saying and the message that he was getting across, that there was a market for that. And in fact, that's what inspired him to go into business. He, you know, after he made this video, he discovered, well, it turns out there's actually something profitable to be done about patriotism in China. So he started this website, and he attracted venture capital investment. He hired staff. He rented a big office. And for a while, it worked. But what he also discovered over time was that, strangely enough, being a patriot, if you wanted to do it in a way that was commercially viable, which is to say that you had to be able to criticize local officials, criticize corruption, that would also inflame the local government, inflame the central government. And so, strangely enough, the patriotic YouTube that he started was eventually shut down by the state. And he found himself in this completely bizarre position of being China's most zealous patriot, and yet at the same time he had run afoul of the censorship authorities.
I'd love it, Evan, if you could read this passage near the end of your book, where you're basically quoting Tang Jie. And I think this will maybe shed a little light on just kind of like who he is and where he's coming from.
For several hundred years, we've been a prisoner of this Western-centric view, which divided the world into two camps, West and East, democracy and authoritarianism, light and dark. Everything light belonged to the West, and everything dark belonged to the East. This worldview should be overturned. That was as close as he came to faith. This is my revolution, he said.
Do you think he's hopeful that he will, in his lifetime, kind of live in a China that he sees as truly Chinese, authentic, that conforms with his view of what the country should be?
I do think he believes that. I really do. I think he is an idealist. And it's odd to say that because, after all, the language that he uses can be fierce and it can be dark about the relationship between China and the rest of the world. But he is, at the end of the day, somebody who believes that he understands that China has an affirmative message to send. It's not simply about being an alternative to the West. He really believes there is a civilization there that has something positive to contribute, and he's just trying desperately to figure out what it is.
Well, Evan Osnes, fascinating stories, fascinating book, Age of Ambition, Chasing Fortune, Truth, and Faith in the New China. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Marco.